Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives have been changed by a medical diagnosis. Ron will not be with us today.
But I'm here, and I'm Jean Marie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm Lita. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking about the complex world of chronic illness with Audrey. Audrey is going to be explaining sick sinus syndrome to us, which we've never discussed on this show. So thank you very much for volunteering to join us. And we're looking forward to hearing all about sick sinus syndrome.
Although we might not be able to say it.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah. Oh, and you're not Ron.
No, I'm not Ron. Thank you for letting me know, Mom. It's good to know. But Audrey, can you start us off by telling us what is sick sinus syndrome?
It is hard to say, but no. So sick sinus syndrome, to put very simply, is when the node or the connection on the back of your heart, basically the connection between your brain and your heart, doesn't quite connect properly. The result is that the pace of the heart is no longer being paced. So like it can go too fast or too slow, but it doesn't actually, like if your heart rate is increased, it's usually because you're exercising or something. But with sick sinus syndrome, your heart rate isn't necessarily going to increase when you're exercising. It could just increase at a random time, like when you're sleeping or something. And that's primarily what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What?
Yeah. What kind of symptoms do you get with that? What led you to your first diagnosis? And are those symptoms typical? And is it easy to get diagnosed?
So my symptoms were not necessarily typical, and it was not easy to get diagnosed with sick sinus syndrome. A lot of people experience like fluttering in their chest, and I probably did experience some of that. But quite honestly, I have a lot of anxiety. So I never really saw it as something that was abnormal. It was just like, well, that's just me feeling panicked about life again. But the primary thing that caused me to get diagnosed was that I started fainting almost every time I stood up. So I was fainting 6 to 10 times a day, if not more. So I obviously went to the doctor. They ran a lot of different tests to try and determine what was going on. Mm-hmm. But the final test that they ran that sort of determined that was a tilt table test.
Tilt table test.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what determined it.
Right.
For somebody with my age and like health histories, especially, it is extremely uncommon, and it was essentially not even on the table when I started going to seek medical help for it. It was like, well, they didn't even mention it.
And they ruled out POTS. They said it wasn't POTS.
I have POTS as well, but it is separate from POTS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just curious, like, how they went from the tilt table, and then did they do any cardiac studies?
They did several
at that
cardiac
point?
Studies. The kind of determining factor was when I had the tilt table test, I went asystolic. That was kind of what set everything apart, was just like, that's not traditional POTS. That should not happen with anything. Like, something is extremely wrong with you. So
I was just going to say the tilt table test is like the most boring roller coaster ride on earth.
Yeah, unless you're me and I don't.
Unless you pass
out.
Yeah.
So yes, they told me when I was having it done that typically they tilt you up and down a few different times. Then they'll essentially give you adrenaline to try and like cause you to pass out. I don't remember anything. I just remember them like kind of coming back to consciousness, and then like with paddles ready to like try and get my heart to start again because it fully stopped.
Oh wow. And so how old were you when you got your diagnosis?
I was 33 years old. I am 35 now.
Okay. Okay. And was there like a triggering event prior to this starting?
So yes and no. I was at the time trying to get clearance to have a hysterectomy because of other health issues that I had.
Okay.
I was fainting a lot, but I kind of thought it might be because of anemia, but somehow that was relatively normal. Mm-hmm. But after like talking to my cardiologist and actually several different cardiologists, they kind of determined that it's a very strange adverse reaction to a flu shot.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And I have every adverse reaction to everything. So it's, that would be the way that it would work.
Yeah. You're extra special in that way.
Extra special. Yeah.
Yes. Although I'm sure your doctors are like, you know, she's so interesting. Which is something you never want doctors to say.
You never want to be interesting.
No.
The typical triggering events are like high blood pressure, being overweight, having like kind of like heart health issues already. I didn't have any of that.
Okay. Okay. And how common is sick sinus syndrome?
It is not common. It is extremely uncommon in younger people and even less common in younger heart healthy people. So like, they never really anticipated this being the issue until they're like, oh, well, this is quite obviously the issue.
And did you have to wear a halter monitor during part of the studies?
That was actually going to be the next thing that they did after my tilt test. But because the tilt test was so conclusive, they were like, we don't even need to do that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then before you received your diagnosis, had you ever heard of sick sinus syndrome? You said it wasn't even something they were considering. It was like the zebra in the room and they were only considering horses. Or do you have any friends or family members who have sick sinus syndrome?
I had never heard of it ever. My mom is a physician's assistant and she actually is a professor for physician's assistants. And so typically she's like, well, it could be all these random strange things because that's, you know, what she does. And when they diagnosed me with that, she's like, wait, what? I've never really encountered that, especially like, everybody, including my doctor, was extremely shocked that somebody that my age, I used to be a like power lifter. So somebody who's considerably healthy and has a healthy diet and all of those things are kind of lining up to not have sick sinus syndrome then have it. So it was definitely not something I'd ever heard of, never considered. I've never met anybody with it other than me.
Yeah, and we hadn't, well, I mean, maybe in the back of my mind I've heard of it, but we've never known anyone with it, so we assumed it was pretty rare. Right. Audrey, how have you and your healthcare team decided to treat this condition?
So the first thing that we did was I got a pacemaker, because obviously I can't, they assumed because of the way that I was fainting so much that I was going asystole every time I was attempting to stand up. So I got a pacemaker and that has helped. I've since gone to several other doctors and they've tried me on a whole lot of different kind of medication. Most of them seem to make things worse. So currently I just have a pacemaker. I have it interrogated every 2 to 3 months remotely. And I have it adjusted every 6 months to every year to make sure it's meeting the needs of what my heart has. Typically a pacemaker only paces like a max of 20% of the time. That's an extremely high rate of pacing for a pacemaker. That's what I've been told. I don't know if that's right or not. My pacemaker paces a minimum of 80% of the time. It's constantly pacing. Yeah. So it's just always like my heart rate is just bananas. I do often wear, like I have an Apple Watch that I wear all the time. So like if I fall, that it can help me with that. And that's mm-hmm. something that they've, you know, suggested me wear. And mm-hmm. another thing, they're like, if you can wear that and see what your heart rate's doing at night, it might help you understand like how you're feeling in the morning. So like I usually wake mm-hmm. up exhausted, but my heart rate usually goes 120, 130 multiple times every night while I'm sleeping. So, you know, that's not very restful.
No, not at all.
But my primary treatment currently is just the pacemaker. I haven't really found any medication that has been beneficial at all, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I think we were thinking more when Lita was in her 30s, she was in a car accident, and this was the time before airbags and not everyone wore a seatbelt. And she hit the steering wheel and started mm-hmm. to have issues. And they went in and they actually ablated the node there because her heart rate was constantly in the 200s. And that was the treatment modality that she had at that time. But this, we are talking, you know, back in the days of carts and wagons. So yeah, things have probably changed.
I'm not that old.
Oh, okay. They've changed a little bit. Audrey, what role does fitness and nutrition play with you now? Are you able to exercise, or is that something that's kind of off the board?
I generally can't exercise. I generally can't do much of anything that requires me to stand or walk for any considerable period of time. And like some days that can be like, I can't walk for more than like 4 minutes or 5 minutes. Some days it's like mm-hmm. 10. And that's kind of just kind of been my new norm.
Okay.
As far as exercising, other than that, I have recently started doing more like I'll do like some Pilates type exercises where I'm laying mm-hmm. down, or like where I'm sitting in a chair. The primary thing, I can't really hurt my heart. It's not going to do anything to that. And I'm probably going to feel dreadful either way, but I do need to, you know, keep exercising for the health of the rest of my body. But I am an extreme fall risk. So I really can't do much. Like, you know, I couldn't like lift weights like I used to, because it's very likely mm-hmm. that I would fall and they'd hit me somehow.
Yeah. That would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I have since this diagnosis, I've still had some episodes where I fainted, like when my husband's gone, like once I fainted and I hit my head and I had a little spot on my brain where it had bled a little bit. I've bruised myself all over my body. So it's like, I've really had to learn, like, you just really have to be pretty still. But I do try and keep some movement just to like, you know, keep blood flowing and everything and help with mental health. As far as diet, I've always been a very healthy eater, and really because of this, like it is considered heart disease of some sort, which is just weird, but mm-hmm. it's not really affected terribly by diet. The only thing that, unless you have a really bad diet to begin with, then you might want to change it. But I eat a very healthy diet. The only thing that I really added into my diet is additional salt. I used to have really low sodium. And that helps like POTS, and it can help with the sick sinus. And really what kind of tends to happen is if I don't treat the POTS will trigger the sick sinus syndrome. Way that it's working currently. Okay. It might change tomorrow, but who knows?
Well, yeah, you got to keep it interesting.
I do also, just because of other health issues and allergies and stuff, I cook almost all of my own food. So I try to be very, very aware of what I'm eating. Sometimes, like, I don't have much alcohol, things like that can kind of trigger me feeling worse. But it has been really hard to kind of like narrow down triggers. It just kind of feels like sometimes everything's a trigger. So, but sure. I do my best.
Okay.
All right. So I was going to ask, what do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of sick sinus syndrome?
So I assumed the only people that like had made unhealthy choices in their life or like overweight or had high blood pressure, you know, had all sort of the kind of like, or had potentially had some sort of accident where they had damaged that node, were the kind of people that would have sick sinus syndrome. Or could develop sick sinus syndrome. I also assumed that it wouldn't happen to somebody who was 33. However, it's likely I had it before. It's probably like some sort of weird genetic birth defect because I have fainted regularly throughout my life. It just was, it came to a point when I was about 33 that I was fainting all the time. So I think that one of the things that's really misunderstood is like, it can just happen. Like they're essentially, I just had all the like right things happen at the right, wrong things at the wrong time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's how I developed this issue. People often ask when they find out that I have sick sinus syndrome, like, well, did you not eat healthy? Did you like not exercise enough? Did you not do all of these things that they assume like keep your heart healthy? And I was doing all of those things. I was exercising like 5 times a week. I was making all of my own food. I had like those little, you know, meal prep things that all of the like super app. I was doing all of the things. I was actually, the day that I got my pacemaker implanted, I was supposed to be at a Olympic triathlon. So like, it's like a 10 mile bike ride, a 5 mile run and a 1 mile bike or swim. So like, I had signed up for that because that was something that I was feeling like I could do physically. So I think that that's really the biggest thing that people assume is that, oh, I did this to myself in some way, and I didn't. It's just how life is. The other thing that I think is really misunderstood is that it's not ever going to get better. I can't make it better. I'm not going to, you know, it's not going to go away. It will get worse throughout my life. I'm really thankful for pacemakers because that makes it, like, it makes me available. I can be alive because of a pacemaker.
Right.
Right.
And people assume, I think, that, oh, you have a heart disease or a problem with your heart. If you like change your lifestyle, then perhaps you can reverse it or get better or the symptoms will get better. And that's just not true with this particular health issue. Like, it's
okay.
It's just part of who I am now.
Right,
so I think
right.
Those are the two biggest assumptions that I think people get wrong.
Okay. Sure. And that kind of leads to my question or my next question.
Well, I was going to ask, are you able to work?
No, I can't work. I can't drive. I can't go to the grocery store. I can't do anything without somebody with me at all times. I mean, I can sit in my house. I can do like tiny things like that. But like, I get very, very tired very quickly. Running, no. Biking, no. Walking my dog, can't do that. Can't, I probably like, I don't know if I'll ever drive again, but driving is like, not possible because I still faint even though I have a pacemaker. It's just not as
right.
frequent. The primary thing is that you can't do anything where if you fall you could be hurt, like which seems like, you know, that's almost everything. So because it's not necessarily the heart that you have to worry about, it's the result of the fainting, like the fact that you're not stable. Like if I faint, I'm in the grocery store, what's going to happen? You know,
right.
I'm going to go to the emergency room again. I don't want to go to the emergency room again. I also will go to the emergency room and not have any of my groceries. Can't drive because, you know, then if I get in a car wreck, then it's my fault. And the doctor's like, well, we told you not to drive your car.
Right.
Can't work because honestly, sitting for 8 hours is not really even a viable option.
Yeah.
So, basically everything that I used to do normally, I can't do anymore.
Well, are you able to make any adaptations? So if, say, you want to go to on an outing or an or to see an event, can you utilize a wheelchair? And this way you're able to enjoy some of the things that you used to do enjoy?
I have not yet started using a wheelchair. I typically just kind of, if I'm with my husband or like my mom or my dad or my brothers, they all kind of are aware of like what to look for if I start getting wobbly. That's what I call it. I say, I feel wobbly. And they're able to help support me. If I have that, I am aware of like an event or something that's supposed to be happening, I will prep for that by like drinking a lot of liquid IV and sleeping a lot. So I feel really well rested. So those sorts of things make it so that I can do some things. The other thing is I live in Southern Illinois. I live right on the Mississippi River. It's extremely hot and humid, and those are really big triggers for me. So I just don't even attempt to do things when it's summer.
Do you live near St. Louis?
Yeah, I live right outside St. Louis.
Okay.
Do you want to go see? Do you want to go see Eric Clapton in September next month?
I know.
Do you want to go see Eric Clapton next month?
It depends on what day.
Okay.
It's in the middle of the week.
Already have tickets.
I already have the tickets. I'll send them to you.
Yes, I would love to see Eric Clapton.
I was going to go with my other daughter, but she can't get off of work. So I'm like,
do a podcast, get tickets to Eric Clapton.
What are you going to do? All right.
I love Eric Clapton.
You're going to Eric Clapton.
Awesome.
All right, great.
That is, this is going to go down in the books as one of the more interesting episodes.
I would love to go to
Eric Clapton.
As
soon as you said that you live down there.
Yeah.
And then another question I have, like Jean was asking as far as a wheelchair. Jean had to use a wheelchair after her injury in the Army. And what we got was, it's a very unique chair. It's not one that you self-push. You have to be propelled by someone. But there are, it reclines.
Oh.
Because Jean also couldn't be upright for too long without being uncomfortable or passing out. So it reclines.
And what the thing that I liked about it the most was, because I felt like a wheelchair, then you know, like, you do you need a wheelchair accessible vehicle? It comes apart and it's aluminum. So it's light,
very lightweight.
Because the designer had watched someone trying to put a wheelchair in their trunk in a rainstorm and was like, there has got to be a better way.
Right. It's
so
very lightweight.
The whole thing comes apart. And same thing, if you're going to go on an airplane, you can take it apart and put it in the overhead bin.
That's a really good idea.
No, not the whole thing.
A lot of the parts that can break, you put in the overhead bin. So we'll send you information on that, too.
Yeah, we will.
My husband is military. We're stationed at Scott.
Oh,
so,
That was my last duty station.
Oh, my gosh.
You are our new favorite person.
Oh, what branch of the service is he in?
He is Air Force, active duty Air Force.
I would have to assume that because the majority of people there.
It is an
there,
Air Force base.
However, there's also a joint base
combined
there, U.S.
So,
TRANSCOM, and that's where I worked as an Army officer. So
that's where we're at.
Awesome,
amazing.
And I will say also, in St. Louis is one of my favorite art museums. So,
they have a great art museum.
Yeah.
I like the art museum because I feel like I can go there sometimes and I can just walk and then sit and then walk and then sit. And it's air conditioned because it can be extremely unpleasant here, as you probably are aware.
Yes.
Like swimming.
Very, very much.
The humidity is pretty rough.
The humidity is terrible.
Audrey, you were mentioning your family has been supportive, and your brothers and your husband and your parents have been supportive. What role have your friends and family played in your healthcare journey?
They have been absolutely amazing. I have had friends, I'm from Kansas. I've had friends that have flown out to St. Louis to help me go to doctor's appointments and stuff because my husband was deployed. I have friends that check in on me regularly just to make sure that like my spirits are up because I can't really do much and leave my house or anything. My mom has come, I think, 6 separate times to St. Louis to help with doctor's appointments. My brothers and my dad all like check in on me regularly, which I can't be more thankful for the way that I have been supported about all of that. It can be hard, I think, for people when you have a friend or a loved one that is going through a basically a huge life change. Like, I was the super mm-hmm. active person that did all these different things all the time. And now I'm not that person anymore. And it can be, you know, super easy to kind of like, okay, well, you know, Audrey can't do that anymore. So like, I don't think we should even tell her about it. But instead, people have been very, very willing to like, how can I make it so that you can still be involved in any and every activity that we would want to do? I'm just extremely thankful for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Kudos to them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Audrey, what are you looking forward to doing next year?
Well, I am I'm going back to grad school to become a clinical mental health counselor, hopefully.
Excellent. Excellent.
It's something that is a job that I could hopefully potentially do without having to, you know, be necessarily 40 hours a week full time. And help other people that might be going through transitions like mine. So that's one thing I'm excited for. Another thing that I'm excited for is my husband and I are obviously legally married, but we haven't had a wedding. So we're supposed to be having a wedding. So
I'm
excited for that.
COVID kind of put.
Yeah. And he got orders right kind of in the middle of that time. So,
Okay.
Yep.
We PCS.
It's difficult to be a family person. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking forward to finding more ways of being able to do things. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a very creative person, so I can typically be like, well, what if we tried it this way? I think that has really helped me through all of this is like, for example, we want to go to New Orleans. My husband's never been to New Orleans. I've been multiple times. Like, well, I think that if we do it this way, like if we drive and we go to these certain places and, you know, take the streetcar and stay at this location, then it will probably be okay. So I think that sort of thing, kind of trying to come up with more creative ways of doing things.
Right.
Something
I know Gene was telling me recently how much it meant to my dad on one of the outings that I took him on, because as he was getting on in his years, he had a really bad heart condition and he could hardly walk 10 feet without getting winded. So I rented him one of those electric wheelchairs he could propel himself, which he thought was the cat's meow.
Oh, he had so much fun.
And he said, I never would have done it. I never would have even thought of doing it.
And you can rent them in a lot of locations. Mm-hmm. So when you get
major cities,
New Orleans, I don't know, because there's a lot of cobblestone and
it
might be a bumpy ride.
That might be a way that you can
visit more places and do more things
and feel more independent because you're kind of in control with that little button.
Mm-hmm. And same thing, I think in Florida, they rent wheelchair accessible vans at the airport and you can rent the electric wheelchair and all of that.
Right.
Okay.
What role has self-care played in your journey since you've had this diagnosis?
That one has actually been a little bit challenging because I feel like everybody has to be involved in everything. And I was a very independent person. But one thing like I really kind of embraced is like, for example, showering is not always the easiest thing when you're wobbly. So I've really like, we have a really nice bathtub and I really embraced the bath. Like you have all the bubbles, you have like the salts, you know, you sit in there, you soak, you might read your book. So I've like, that's like my, like, you know, ritual is I have this really nice bath. I've also sort of leaned into more creative things like painting and doing like knitting and embroidery and stuff that I previously enjoyed but just didn't spend much time doing. So like kind of like finding, I have the time now and I can still use like my hands to do stuff like that. Another thing that I've really recently found that I really enjoy is that it's through Lululemon, like the athletic company. It's called Lululemon Studio. It's an app that you can put on your phone, and like they have hundreds of workouts that you can do, maybe even thousands, but you can put in there like, I need a workout that's like slow, that I'm either just lying down or just sitting down, that doesn't use any equipment, that's 15 minutes long, and it will give you different activities. Like, okay, here's like a workout for you to like just move your arms a little bit in a chair for 15 minutes. And
yeah,
right.
Like, to me, that's really awesome because it's like all, it's hard to like find the motivation or the like even like the mental capacity to come up with like that kind of thing on your own, and I'm not going to go to a workout class anywhere.
Right. And a lot of the videos online, it goes there, you know, it's like, all about going from standing to you're doing work on the ground and then you're back up again.
Yeah, yeah.
right
and they're like built to be like 30-45 minutes, and you know, that's maybe in the future, but definitely not right now.
Are there any craft groups there on base?
I don't
like MWR.
There probably are. I live in Collinsville, so I'm kind of halfway between base and St. Louis, which is actually great because I go to Barnes Jewish for almost everything, and Barnes Jewish is absolutely phenomenal. But if we were on base, it'd be like a really long drive. It's like 40 minutes, depending on the shenanigans of St. Louis traffic.
Right.
That's where Lita donated a kidney.
Oh wow. Good for you.
She likes that hospital.
There's a museum in St. Louis that I was doing some docent volunteering at called Campbell House Museum. But I have recently started doing transcription of letters from the family that used to live there. So that's a thing that I'm enjoying doing.
Okay.
That's very cool. Yeah. If you can read cursive from, you know, the 1800s.
If you go like, you have to go like this.
And I think the National Archives occasionally will ask for people to assist with things of that nature too. Audrey, what advice do you have for someone who's been recently diagnosed with sick sinus syndrome?
I think the most important thing is for you to feel at peace with your own health. So like if you need to make changes to make yourself be healthier, or if you like for example, I felt when I was diagnosed, I went through sort of a period of like wondering what I could have changed or what I could have done differently or what I need to change or do differently to ensure that I'm healthier for the rest of my life. So if there's changes or shifts that you need to do to have that peace, I think that that's really important. But I also think that it's really important to realize that we live in a world and an environment in the US that is very well set up in general for people that have health issues. Most of the world is not set up for people with any kind of disability. I mean, for example, if you go to Europe, you can't really go much of anywhere because everything's cobblestone and wobbly and everything. But like here, most places have some sort of option for a handicapped person.
The American with Disabilities Act has made it very, very easy for individuals.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
It's not always, but most of the time. And like, just like lean into that. You don't have to stop living. You don't have to give up. You just have to kind of modify the way that you do things. And, you know, you have to like give yourself grace. You have to be like, okay, it's okay if I don't feel well enough to do that. That's fine. I don't have to feel bad about it. I just can not feel that well today. I don't have to like feel upset or like super apologize to people because my body's not working as well today as it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is really important. I also think that something that I've found to be helpful is that if you're not getting the answer from a doctor that you feel is what you want or what you feel is accurate for your health condition, go to a different doctor. I initially mm-hmm. had a doctor that had my pacemaker set on essentially factory settings. So it was not going to do any of the things that it needed to do to help me. Like, it was going to help me a little bit, but not significantly. So, and that was because I was going to a cardiologist, which is, you know, I think that that's what you need to do. But then I went to an electrocardiologist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Who knows? That's his whole life is working with the natural pacemaker or whatever pacemaker you have. And he has done so much for my ability to do things.
That's fantastic.
And you sometimes just kind of have to keep pushing your medical providers to try and get to where you think that you need to be for that.
Okay. Yeah. You know your body best.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Audrey, thank you very much for joining us today and taking the time to talk with us today. We hope that you will enjoy the concert. How can our listeners learn more about you and Sick Sinus Syndrome?
I do have social media. I have an Instagram and a TikTok if they want to follow me on those or go search for me on those. I'm Audramus Rex, AudraMusRex. I share about my different health journeys on there quite a bit, and they can always message me there if they have any questions. I am an open book and always willing to talk to people about it. As far as Sick Sinus Syndrome itself, I really like looking at the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins, which you guys sent me as well, but those are my top two anyway. And often on Facebook, there are like support groups for almost everything. So you can look for a support group, and sometimes they have really, really helpful things in those.
Great. We're going to put links on the webpage that we developed for this episode.
Okay.
And I might be reaching out to get those links from you.
Okay.
But thank you very much, Audrey. It's been pleasure talking with you today.
And thank you so much. Thank your husband for his service. We appreciate that.
And thank you guys.
Yeah. Thanks. If our listeners have any questions or comments about today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
As always, please remember that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.